Take Christmas ribbon, pale blue and an inch wide, the kind you use to wrap presents. Set a lighted candle on a bare floor. Take 50 feet of ribbon and string it in a circle with the candle at the center, balancing the ribbon on edge so that the inner side catches the candlelight. But the Kazin's tail was lashing back and forth, back and forth. After all, that wasn't a candle in the middle, that was a sun. "By now you know," said Chiron, "that we have been moving north along the galactic axis for the past 204 of your Earth years. In Kazin years..."
217.
"Yes. During that time we have naturally observed the space ahead of us for signs of danger and the unexpected. We had known that the star EC-1752 was ringed with an uncharacteristically dense and narrow band of dark matter. It was assumed that the ring was dust or rock. Yet it was surprisingly regular. Some 90 days ago, our fleet of worlds reached a position such that the ring occluded the star itself. We saw that the ring was sharply bounded. Further investigation revealed that the ring is not gas, nor dust, nor even asteroidal rock, but a solid band of considerable tensile strength. Naturally, we were terrified."
Speaker to animals asked, "How were you able to deduce its tensile strength?"
"Spectroanalysis and frequency shifts gave us a relative difference in velocities. The ring is clearly rotating about its primary at 770 miles per second, a velocity high enough to compensate for the pull of gravity from the primary and to provide an additional centripetal acceleration of 9.94 meters per second. Consider the tensile strength needed to prevent the structure from disintegrating under such a pull."
"Gravity," said Louis.
"Apparently."
"Gravity, a touch less than Earth's. There's somebody living there, on the inner surface."
"Who?" said Louis Wu,
for the full impact was beginning to hit him, and the little hairs were rising along his spinal column. He heard the swish-swish of the Kazin's tail cutting air. It was not the first time men had met their superiors. Thus far, men had been lucky. Abruptly, Louis stood up and walked toward the dome wall. It didn't work. The ring and the star receded before him until he touched a smooth surface. But he saw something he hadn't noticed before. The ring was checkered. There were regular rectangular shadows along its blue back. "Can you give us a better picture?"
"We can expand it," said the contralto voice.
The G2 star jerked forward, then shot blazing off to the right, so that Louis was looking down on the lighted inner surface of the ring. Blurred as it was, Louis could only guess that the brighter, whiter areas might be cloud, that regions of faintly deeper blue might be land, where lighter blue was sea. But the shadowed areas were quite visible. The ring seemed to be laid out in rectangles, a long strip of glowing baby blue, followed by a shorter strip of deep navy blue, followed by another long strip of light blue. Dots and dashes.
"Something's causing those shadows," he said.
"Something in orbit?"
"Yes, just that. 20 rectangular shapes orbit in a Kemplerer rosette much nearer the primary. We do not know their purpose."
"You wouldn't. It's been too long since you had a sun. These orbiting rectangles must be there to separate night from day. Otherwise, it would always be high noon on the ring."
"You will understand now why we called for your help. Your alien insights were bound to be of value."
"Uh-huh. How big is the ring? Have you studied it much? Have you sent probes?"
"We have studied the ring as best we could without slowing our velocity and without otherwise attracting notice to ourselves. We have sent no probes, of course. Since they would have to be remotely controlled by hyperwave, such probes might be traced back to us."
"You can't track a hyperwave signal. It's theoretically impossible."
"Perhaps those who built the ring have evolved different theories."
"Hmm.
But we have studied the ring with other instruments."
As Chiron spoke, the scene on the dome wall changed to blacks and whites and grays. Outlines shifted and wavered.
"We have taken photographs and holographs in all electromagnetic frequencies. If you are interested..."
They don't show much detail.
No, the light is too much bent by gravitational fields and solar wind and intervening dust and gases. Our telescopes cannot find further detail.
So you haven't really learned much.
I would say that we have learned a great deal. One puzzling point. The ring apparently stops on the close order of 40% of neutrinos.
Tila merely looked bewildered, but Speaker made a startled sound, and Louis whistled, very low. That eliminated everything. Normal matter, even the terrifically compressed matter in the heart of a star, would stop almost no neutrinos. Any neutrino stood a 50-50 chance of getting through several light-years thickness of lead. An object in a slaver stasis field reflected all neutrinos. So did a general product's hull. But nothing known would stop 40% of neutrinos and let the rest through.
Something new, then, said Louis. Chiron, how big is this ring? How massive is it?
The ring masses 2 times 10 to the 30th power in grams, measures 0.95 times 10 to the 8th power miles in radius, and something less than 10 to the 6th power miles across.
Louis was not comfortable thinking in abstract powers of 10. He tried to translate the numbers into pictures. He had been right to think of inch-wide Christmas ribbon, balanced on edge and strung in a loop. The ring was more than 90 million miles in radius, about 600 million miles long, he estimated, but less than a million miles across, edge to edge. It massed a little more than the planet Jupiter.
Somehow that doesn't seem massive enough, he said. Something that big should weigh as much as a good-sized sun.
The Kazin agreed.
One has the ludicrous picture of billions of beings trying to live on a construct no thicker than book film.
Your intuition is wrong, said the puppeteer with silver curls. Consider the dimensions. If the ring were a ribbon of hull metal, for example, it would be approximately 50 feet thick.
50 feet? That was hard to believe.
But Tila's eyes had been turned to the ceiling, and her lips had been moving silently but rapidly.
He's right, she said. The math works out. But what's it for? Why would anyone build such a thing?
Room.
Room?
Room to live, Louis amplified. That's what it's all about. 600 trillion square miles of surface area is 3 million times the surface area of the Earth. It'd be like having 3 million worlds all mapped flat and joined edge to edge. 3 million worlds within air car distance. That'd solve any population problem.
And what a problem they must have had. You don't go into a project like that one just for kicks.
A point, said the Kazin. Chiron, have you searched neighboring stars for other similar rings?
Yes, we...
And found none, as I thought. If the race that built the ring had known of faster-than-light travel, they would have settled other stars. They would not have needed the ring. Therefore, there is only one ring.
Yes.
I am reassured. We are superior to the ringmakers in at least one respect.
The Kazin stood suddenly.
Are we to explore the habitable surface of the ring?
A physical landing might prove to be overambitious.
Nonsense. We must inspect the vehicle you have prepared for us. Is its landing gear sufficiently versatile? When may we depart?
Chiron whistled, a startled burst of discord. You must be mad. Consider the power of those who built this ring. They make my own civilization seem savages.
Or cowards.
Very well. You may go to inspect your craft when the one you call Nessus returns. For the time previous to that event, there are more data regarding the ring.
You try my patience, said the speaker, but he sat down.
You liar, thought Louis. You fake it well, and I'm proud of you.
His own stomach was queasy as he returned to his couch. A baby blue ribbon stretched across the stars, and man had met superior beings. Again.
The Kazinti had been first. When men first used fusion drives to cross the gaps between the stars, the Kazinti were already using the gravity polarizer to power their interstellar warships. It made their ships faster and more maneuverable than human ships. Man's resistance to the Kazinti fleet would have been nominal had it not been for the Kazinti lesson.
A reaction drive is a weapon devastating in direct proportion to its efficiency as a drive.